Over the weekend, hundreds of Central American migrant families arrived at San Antonio. They're asylum seekers who were released en masse by Customs and Border Protection. When they turned up at the Greyhound bus station, area charities and the city of San Antonio scrambled to provide emergency services. Texas Public Radio's David Martin Davies reports.
On Saturday afternoon at the Catholic Charities Community Center on San Antonio's west side, an infant is struggling to breathe. He's only a month old, and already he has seen more upheaval than most adults. His family says they were forced to flee their home in Guatemala. The child was born in Mexico while they journeyed to the United States. After being detained by immigration authorities at the border, the family was released. Now in San Antonio, the heavy oak pollen in the air is overwhelming for the baby. San Antonio Archbishop Gustavo Garcia Sierre calls a nurse over. Garcia Sierre translates for the nurse. What's the child's name? Anthony Antonio, the Archbishop laughs, recognizing the connection to the city now welcoming these migrant families. The nurse uses a blue rubber suction bulb to clear the mucus in Antonio's nose. He calms down. All he needed was a little help. Garcia Sierre says that's what they're trying to do.
We are blessed to help. We will not stop helping them.
The Archbishop says these asylum seekers are no threat to the United States.
You can see it's mainly families, mothers, fathers, babies. It's a young population. And of course, we were not expecting that many now.
The spike in numbers of asylum seekers has raised concerns across the South Texas border. More than 76,000 immigrants without authorization surrendered or were apprehended by U.S. Customs and Border Protection in February, the highest number in more than a decade. And they're showing up in parts of the border that don't normally see many asylum seekers, like in the Del Rio and Eagle Pass areas southwest of San Antonio. So beginning Thursday, the Border Patrol began releasing many from detention in South Texas.
These people, they are not breaking the law. They are not breaking the law.
He says they're not illegal immigrants. They are requesting asylum, which is allowed. They are given documentation by CBP to enter the United States and pursue their claims in immigration court. So calling them undocumented isn't accurate either. Nevertheless, approximately 300 families arrived in San Antonio over the weekend. So many that, for the first time, the city of San Antonio opened a pop-up immigration resource center. Across the street from the Greyhound bus station, it's in an empty storefront. On the floor, children are intensely playing while volunteers help parents figure out their next steps. San Antonio Interim Assistant City Manager Colleen Bridger said setting up the resource center was an emergency response.
We set this up to get us through the weekend because folks were getting real tired. We had a lot of people coming in late Thursday night, late Friday night, and our nonprofit partners were just stretched beyond their abilities.
But the city doesn't know how long they'll be needing to keep it open.
Even when we talk to Border Patrol and ICE, they're not sure how many people are going to continue to come across the border seeking asylum.
In the past, the CBP released immigrants arriving in San Antonio with travel plans and bus tickets, all arranged while they spent time in detention. But many in this wave of asylum seekers didn't spend that much time in detention, so they're being dropped off with no money, no bus tickets, and no idea how to get to their final destination. To top that off, there are so many immigrants being released that almost all of the buses leaving San Antonio were sold out, leaving the families stranded till Monday or later. That left nonprofits buying bus tickets and hotel rooms for the families. Antonio Fernandez, the CEO of Catholic Charities, said unless they get financial support from the city, they will soon run out of money.
So I asked financial support today from the city. I hope they can give it to us because, you know, sooner or later, I will not be able to do this anymore.
And with no sign of slowing down on the border, with Central American families continuing to arrive, the question for many is how long can San Antonio sustain its welcoming response? In San Antonio, I'm David Martin Davies for the Texas Standard.
The Migrant Protection Protocols, also known as Remain in Mexico, has so far forced more than 57,000 migrants to wait in Mexico while their immigration cases wind through immigration court. Last week at a congressional hearing on the policy, Laura Peña, an attorney for the Texas Civil Rights Project, told lawmakers Remain in Mexico is a violation of U.S. law and puts the Central American asylum seekers in danger.
Asylum seekers are being returned to dangerous cities where organizations have documented hundreds of incidents of kidnappings and violence.
Congressman Mike Rogers, the Republican ranking member on the Homeland Security Committee, defended Remain in Mexico.
I wholeheartedly support the Remain in Mexico policy. I think it's an essential policy and it is in no way inhumane. MPP discourages non-meritorious or false asylum claims and actually helps decrease the wait time for immigrant court hearings.
A recent analysis by Human Rights First found 340 publicly reported instances of kidnapping, rape, torture, and other types of violence against migrants returned to Mexico under MPP. How is Remain in Mexico actually working? Texas Public Radio's David Martin Davies went to Nuevo Laredo to find out more.
I'm at a nondescript house in Nuevo Laredo, Mexico. To get inside, there's an iron gate to unlock and a curtain in front of a big wooden door. Once inside, I find this small house is crammed full with people. Central American refugees, mostly mothers and their children, many are sitting on the floor of a hallway.
We're renting the house for them to stay here.
Ruth Ortiz is my guide. She is the daughter of Pastor Lorenzo Ortiz, who is providing food, clothing, and shelter for the asylum seekers waiting in Mexico.
This has been open since August. So this place is needed, we will continue to help.
About 100 people are in this shelter. Every space is taken up. The little concrete back patio is filled with cots and clotheslines for an extra sleeping area. On this day, Pastor Ortiz was called to Monterey, where he runs another refugee house. But I spoke to him on the phone as he drives back to Nuevo Laredo.
I got six people coming with me from Monterey. They're coming to the hearings tomorrow. And then I got to go straight to the bridge and pick up the ones that are there already. There's about 80 people already waiting.
The immigration court hearings are held in a white circus tent next to the International Bridge in Laredo, Texas. The asylum seekers line up at 4 in the morning. They're allowed to cross for a video link hearing with an immigration judge, and then they're sent right back to Nuevo Laredo. This is the system that came about last June called Remain in Mexico. This has dramatically decreased the number of asylum seekers allowed into the U.S., but it puts the asylum seekers in danger. In Matamoros, a refugee camp was set up, but Nuevo Laredo is so dangerous that authorities wouldn't allow a camp.
In Nuevo Laredo, people are really in hiding rather than out in the open.
Sister Denise LaRocque has been bringing supplies from San Antonio for the refugees.
In Matamoros, they're out in the open, but they're very close to the port of entry. Whereas here, they're really in hiding.
They're hiding from the cartels. According to a 2018 State Department report, there are no safe areas in border cities like Matamoros and Nuevo Laredo due to gunfights, grenade attacks, and kidnappings. The State Department has labeled this region a level 4 threat risk. That's the same category as Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. The cartels prey on the Central American refugees by kidnapping them and torturing them until their relatives pay a ransom.
So there was one time that the bad guys came.
Nos tiraron todos al piso, la gente corrió para acá atrás.
Santiago, the shelter's manager, said gunmen busted in and ordered everyone on the ground. They wanted to know who was running this operation, and when they learned it was a Christian group helping migrants and not a rival cartel, they left. But Santiago says everyone is afraid that the cartels will return. At the shelter, one woman from Guatemala who didn't want to give her name explained how she had been kidnapped in Mexico.
And they just got me into a vehicle and they just placed a jacket on my face.
For 8 days, along with other migrants, she was tied up with tape over her mouth. She managed to get free, climb out of a window, and find her way to this shelter. And she has a message for President Donald Trump. She says Mexico is a very dangerous place, and she hopes he hears about what's happening and it touches his heart.
The United States has created this crisis at the Mexican border.
Sister Denise LaRocque says it's the policies under Trump that created Remain in Mexico.
Putting families in the hands of corrupt officials, gang members, cartels.
And for these people, that means remain in danger. In Nuevo Laredo, Mexico, David Martin Davies reporting.
Establishing time of death is a piece of information that in a murder investigation can lead to arresting and convicting the perpetrator or exonerating someone wrongfully accused. Getting it right can mean life or death for someone like Texas death row inmate Larry Swearingen. He's facing execution tomorrow for a murder he says he didn't commit. Texas Public Radio's David Martin Davies went to the Texas Hill Country Body Ranch to find out more about the science of time of death.
Scattered across an open field under the hot Texas sun, there are dozens of human bodies. Their skin is blackened. Their flesh is half eaten by bugs and varmints. They are in varying states of decay. This isn't the scene from a horror movie. This is science.
What we're interested in doing is getting some kind of idea of the rate of decomposition and then the pattern of decomposition.
Professor Daniel Westcott is in the Department of Anthropology at Texas State University. He is the director of their Forensic Anthropology Center, which some people call the Body Ranch.
We typically have about 60 to 70 bodies out at any given time.
This is one of seven outdoor body composition laboratories in the United States and the largest such forensic research facility in the world.
What you want to try to do is have some kind of baseline information about what's going on and then alter a single thing to look at how that affects it.
Here, human cadavers are left out in the open and carefully monitored for patterns of decomposition. That data is used to train forensic experts so when they look at a murder victim, they can read the body in the crime scene to gain an understanding of the time of death.
It's not guesswork. So what we're doing, we do lots of bodies so we have a good idea of the normal variation.
In the murder of Melissa Trotter, establishing when she died is central to the conviction and pending execution of Larry Swearingen. Trotter went missing in Willis, Texas on December 8, 1998. Her body was found 25 days later on January 2nd in the Sam Houston National Forest. Swearingen had been arrested and jailed on December 11th, 3 days after Trotter was last seen alive. Swearingen says he didn't kill her, and based on the condition of Trotter's body, forensic experts say there are questions about his guilt.
The climate, weather temperature, the data, the environment where it was found, looked at all the weights, the organs, looked at everything. They said Melissa died within 10 to 12 days of her body being discovered.
There's a lot of circumstantial evidence in this case that the prosecution says points directly to Swearingen, but there's no DNA that ties Swearingen to the death of Trotter. The prosecution's case depends on establishing that Trotter died before Swearingen was jailed. The forensic evidence for that narrative is weak at best.
Science can only tell you so much.
Kelly Blackburn is with the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office, which prosecuted Swearingen.
You have to look at the whole story. No matter how good the scientist is, for whatever reason they're giving their opinion on, whether and how unbiased they claim to be, there's still interpretation.
James Riding, the attorney for Swearingen, says the time of death is a major problem for the state's case. He says the bottom line is, if Melissa Trotter's body was in the forest for 25 days, it should have been in terrible condition.
The body weighed the same the day that girl disappeared as it did on the slab. And it was left out in the open in the Texas woods. A woods that is filled, as everyone knows, with vultures, with raccoons, with wild pigs. There should not have been much left of that body at all after 25 days, let alone 105 pounds out of 105 pounds.
But Westcott from the Body Ranch said some bodies don't always decompose the way you'd expect them to. Sometimes there are surprises.
It does occur. So typically when we get one that is a little bit off of what we expect, it usually turns out to be that they were on a heavy dose of antibiotics at the time or chemotherapy.
Forensic entomology and establishing the time of death is a science, but if it's an exact science, shouldn't depend on if it's being used by the prosecution or the defense. David Martin Davies, Texas Public Radio News.